Magrat found her way to the great hall, empty and deserted at this time of day, except for a couple of guards who were playing dice. They wore the tabards of Felmet's own personal bodyguard, and stopped their game as soon as she appeared.
"Well, well," said one, leering. "Come to keep us company, have you, my pretty?"
No one knows why men say things like this. Any minute now, he is probably going to say he likes a girl with spirit. "I was looking for the dungeons," said Magrat, to whom the words "sexual harassment" were a mere collection of syllables.
"Just fancy," said one of the guards, winking at the other. "I reckon we can help you there."
They got up and stood either side of her. She was aware of two chins you could strike matches on, and an overpowering smell of stale beer. Frantic signals from outlying portions of her mind began to break down her iron-hard conviction that bad things only happen to bad people. They escorted her down several flights of steps into a maze of dank, arched passageways, as she sought hurriedly for some polite way of disengaging herself. "I should warn you," she said. "I am not, as I may appear, a simple apple seller."
"Fancy that!"
"I am, in fact, a witch." This did not make the impression she had hoped. The guards exchanged glances.
"Fair enough," said one. "I've always wondered what it was like to kiss a witch. Around here, they do say you gets turned into a frog."
The other guard nudged him.
"I reckon, then," he said, in the slow, ripe tones of one who thinks that what he's about to say next is going to be incredibly funny, "you kissed one years ago."
The brief guffaw was suddenly interrupted when Magrat was flung against the wall and treated to a close-up view of the guard's nostrils.
"Now listen to me, sweetheart," he said. "You ain't the first witch we've had down here, if witch you be. But you could be lucky and walk out again if you're nice to us, do you see?"
There was a shrill, short scream from somewhere nearby.
"That, you see," said the guard, "was a witch, having it the hard way. You could do us all a favour, see? Lucky you met us, really."
His questing hand stopped its wandering.
"What's this?" he said to Magrat's pale face. "A knife? A knife? I reckon we gotta take that very seriously, don't you, Huron?" "You've got to tie her hands and gag her," said Huron hurriedly. "They can't do no magic if they can't speak or wave their hands about."
"You can take your hands off her!"
All three stared down the passage at the fool. He was jingling with rage.
"Let her go this minute," he shouted, "or I'll report you."
"Oh, you'll report us, will you?" said Huron. "And will anyone listen to you, you ear-waxed coloured little twerp?" "This is a witch we have here," said the other guard. "So you can go and tinkle somewhere else."
He turned back to Magrat.
"I like a girl with spirit," he said, incorrectly as it turned out.
The fool advanced with the bravery of the terminally angry.
"I told you to let her go," he repeated.
Huron drew his sword and winked at his companion. Magrat struck. It was an unplanned, instinctive blow, its stopping power considerably enhanced by the weight of rings and bangles. Her arm whirred around in an arc that connected with her captor's jaw and spun him twice before he folded in a heap with a quiet little sigh, and incidentally with several symbols of occult significance embossed on his cheek. Huron gaped at him, and then looked at Magrat. He raised his sword at about the same moment that the fool cannoned into him, and the two men went down in a struggling heap. Like most small men, the fool relied on the initial mad rush to secure an advantage, and was at a loss for a follow-through, and it would probably have gone hard with him if Huron hadn't suddenly become aware that a bread knife was pressed to his neck.
"Let go of him," said
Magrat, pushing her hair out of her eyes. He stiffened.
"'You're wondering whether I would really cut your throat,' panted McGrath. "'I don't know either. Think of the fun we could have together, finding out.'
She reached down with the other hand and hauled the fool to his feet by his collar.
"'Where did that scream come from?' she said, without taking her eyes off the guard. "'It was down this way. They've got her in the torture dungeon, and I don't like it. It's going too far, and I couldn't get in, and I came to look for someone.
"'Well, you found me,' said McGrath.
"'You,' she said to Hron, "'will stay here, or run away for all I care, but you won't follow us.'
He nodded and stared after them as they hurried down the passage.
"'The door's locked,' said the fool. "'There's all sorts of noises, but the door's locked.'
"'Well, it's a dungeon, isn't it?'
"'They're not supposed to lock it from the inside.'
"'It was, indeed, unbudgeable. "'Silence came from the other side, "'a busy, thick silence that crawled through the cracks "'and spilled out into the passage, "'a kind of silence that is worse than screams. "'The fool hopped from one foot to the other "'as McGrath explored the door's rough surface.
"'Are you really a witch?' he said. "'They said you were a witch. Are you really? You don't look like a witch. You look very... that is...
he blushed.
Not like a, you know, crone at all, but absolutely beautiful.
His voice trailed into silence.
I am totally in control of the situation, McGrath told herself. I never thought I would be, but I am thinking absolutely clearly.
And she realized, in an absolutely clear way, that her padding had slipped down to her waist. Her head felt as though a family of unhygienic birds had been nesting in it, and her eyeshadow had not so much run as sprinted. Her dress was torn in several places, her legs were scratched, her arms were bruised, and for some reason she felt on top of the world.
"'I think you'd better stand back, Varence,' she said. "'I'm not sure how this is going to work.'
There was a sharp intake of breath.
"'You know my name?'
McGrath sized up the door. The oak was old, centuries old, but she could sense just a little sap under a surface, varnished by the years into something that was nearly as tough as stone. Normally, what she had in mind would require a day's planning and a bagful of exotic ingredients. At least, so she'd always believed. Now she was prepared to doubt it. If you could conjure demons out of washtubs... you could do anything. She became aware that the fool had spoken.
"'Oh, I expect I heard it somewhere,' she said vaguely.
"'I shouldn't think so. I never use it,' said the fool.
"'I mean, it's not a popular name with the Duke. It was me ma'am, you see. They like to name you after kings, I suppose. My granddad said I had no business having the name like that, and he said I shouldn't go around—'
McGrath nodded. She was looking around the dank tunnel with a professional's eye. It wasn't a promising place. The old oak planks had been down here in the darkness all these years, away from the clock of the seasons. On the other hand, Granny had said that somehow all trees were one tree, or something like that. McGrath thought she understood it, although she didn't know exactly what it meant. And it was springtime up there. The ghost of life that still lived in the wood must know that, or if it had forgotten, it must be told. She put her palms flat on the door again and shut her eyes, tried to think her way out through the stone, out of the castle, and into the thin black soil of the mountains, into the air, into the sunlight. The fool was merely aware that McGrath was standing very still. Then her hair stood out from her head, gently, and there was a smell of leaf mould. And then, without warning, the hammer that can drive a marshmallow-soft toadstool through 6 inches of solid pavement, or an eel across 1,000 miles of hostile ocean to a particular pond in an upland field, struck up through her and into the door. She stepped back carefully, her mind stunned. Fighting against a desperate urge to bury her toes into the rock and put forth leaves, the fool caught her, and the shock nearly knocked him over. McGrath sagged against the faintly jingling body, and felt triumphant. She had done it, and with no artificial aids. If only the others could have seen this.
"Don't go near it," she mumbled. "I think I gave it rather a lot."
The fool was still holding her toast-racked body in his arms, and was too overcome to utter a word, but she still got a reply.
"I reckon you did," said Granny Weatherwax, stepping out of the shadows. "I never would have thought of it myself."
McGrath peered at her.
"You've been here all the time?"
"Just a few minutes."
Granny glanced at the door.
"Good technique," she said. "But it's old wood. Been in the fire, too, I reckon. Lot of iron nails and stuff in there. Can't see it working. I'd have tried the stones if it was me, but..."
She was interrupted by a soft pop. There was another, and then a whole series of them together, like a shower of meringues. Behind her, very gently, the door was breaking into leaf. Granny stared at it for a few seconds, and then met McGrath's terrified gaze.
"Run!"
she yelled. They grabbed the fool and scurried into the shelter of a convenient buttress. The door gave a warning creak. Several of its planks twisted in vegetable agony, and there was a shower of rock splinters when nails were expelled like thorns from a wound, ricocheting off the stonework. The fool ducked as part of the lock whirred over his head and smashed into the opposite wall. The lower parts of the planks extended questing white roots, which slithered along the damp stone to the nearest crack and began to auger in. Knot holes bulged, burst, and thrust out branches, which hit the stones of the doorway and tumbled them aside. And all the time there was a low groan, the sound of the cells of the wood trying to contain the surge of raw life pounding through them.
"If it had been me,"
said Granny Weatherwax, as part of the ceiling caved in further along the passage,
"I wouldn't have done it like that. Not that I'm objecting, mind you," she said, as McGrath opened her mouth. "It's a reasonable job. I think you might have overdone it a bit, that's all."
"Excuse me," said the fool.
"I can't do rocks," said McGrath.
"Well, no, rocks is an acquired taste."
"Excuse me."
The two witches stared at him, and he backed away.
"Weren't you supposed to be rescuing someone?" he said.
"Oh," said Granny. "Yes, come on, McGrath. We'd better see what she's been getting up to."
"There were screams,"
said the fool, who couldn't help feeling that they weren't taking things seriously enough.
"I dare say,"
said Granny, pushing him aside and stepping over the writhing taproot.
"If anyone locked me in a dungeon, there'd be screams."
There was a lot of dust inside the dungeon, and by the nimbus of light around its one torch, McGrath could dimly make out two figures cowering in the furthest corner. Most of the furniture had been overturned and scattered across the floor. It didn't look as though any of it had been designed to be in the last word of comfort. Nanny Ogg was sitting quite calmly in what appeared to be a sort of stocks.
"Took your time," she observed. "Let me out of this, will you? I'm getting cramp."
And there was the dagger. It spun gently in the middle of the room, glinting when the turning blade caught the light.
"My own dagger,"
said the ghost of the king, in a voice only the witches could hear.
"All this time, and I never knew it. My own dagger. They bloody well did me in with my own bloody knife."
He took another step towards the royal couple, waving the dagger. A faint gurgle escaped from the lips of the Duke, glad to be out of there.
"He's doing well, isn't he?"
said Nanny, as McGrath helped her out of her prison.
"Isn't that the old king? Can they see him?"
"Shouldn't think so."
King Verence staggered slightly under the weight. He was too old for such poltergeist activity. You had to be an adolescent for this.
"Let me just get a grip on this thing," he said. "Oh, damn!"
The knife dropped from the ghost's tenuous grasp and clattered to the floor. Granny Weatherwax stepped forward smartly and put her foot on it.
"The dead shouldn't kill the living," she said. "It could be a dangerous, precedent. We'd all be outnumbered, for one thing."
The Duchess surfaced from her terror first. There had been knives swooping through the air and exploding doors, and now these women were defying her in her own dungeons. She couldn't be sure how she was supposed to react to the supernatural items, but she had very firm ideas about how she should tackle the last one. Her mouth opened like the gateway to a red hell.
"Guards!"
she yelled, and spotted the fool hovering near the door.
"Fool, fetch the guards!"
"They're busy, and we're just leaving," said Granny. "Which one of you is the Duke?"
Felmet stared pink-eyed up at her from his half-crouch in the corner. A thin dribble of saliva escaped from the corner of his mouth, and he giggled. Granny looked closer. In the center of those streaming eyes, something else looked back at her.
"I'm going to give you no cause," she said quietly. "But it would be better for you if you left this country. Abdicate, or whatever."
"In favor of whom?"
said the Duchess, icily.
"A witch?"
"I won't," said the Duke.
"What did you say?"
The Duke pulled himself upright, brushed some of the dust off his clothes, and looked Granny full in the face. The coldness in the center of his eyes was larger.
"I said, I won't," he said. "Do you think a bit of simple conjuring would frighten me? I am the king by right of conquest, and you cannot change it. It's as simple as that, witch."
He moved closer. Granny stared at him. She hadn't faced anything like this before. The man was clearly mad, but at the heart of his madness was a dreadful cold sanity, a core of pure interstellar ice in the center of the furnace. She'd thought him weak under a thin shell of strength, but it went a lot further than that. Somewhere deep inside his mind, somewhere beyond the event horizon of rationality, the sheer pressure of insanity had hammered his madness into something harder than diamond.
"If you defeat me by magic, magic will rule," said the Duke. "And you can't do it. And any king raised with your help would be under your power, hag-ridden, I might say. Which magic rules, magic destroys. It would destroy you too, you know it. Ha ha!"
Granny's knuckles whitened as he moved closer.
"You could strike me down," he said, "and perhaps you could find someone to replace me. But he would have to be a fool indeed, because he would know he was under your evil eye. And if he mispleased you, why, his life would be instantly forfeit. You could protest all you wished, but he'd know he ruled with your permission, and that would make him no king at all. Is it not true?"
Granny looked away. The other witches hung back, ready to duck.
"I said, is it not true?" "Yes," said Granny. "It is true." "Yes. But there is one who could defeat you," said Granny slowly. "The child? Let him come when he is grown, a young man with a sword seeking his destiny," the Duke sneered. "Very romantic. But I have many years to prepare. Let him try."
Beside him, King Varence's fist smashed through the air and quite failed to connect. The Duke leaned closer until his nose was an inch from Granny's face.
"Get back to your cauldrons, weird sisters," he said softly.
Granny Weatherwax stalked through the passages of Loncre Castle like a large, angry bat, the Duke's laughter echoing around her head.
"You could give him boils or something," said Nanny Ogg. "Hemorrhoids are good, that's allowed. It won't stop him ruling, it just means he'll have to rule standing up. Always good for a laugh, that. Or piles."
Granny Weatherwax said nothing. If fury were heat, her hat would have caught fire.
"Mind you, that'd probably make him worse," said Nanny, running to keep up. "Same with toothache."
She gave a sideways glance at Granny's twitching features.
"You needn't fret," she said. "They didn't do anything much, but thanks anyway."
"I ain't worried about you, Gaither Og," snapped Granny. "I only came along because McGrath was fretting. What I say is, if a witch can't look after herself, she's got no business calling herself a witch."
"McGrath done well with the woodwork, I thought."
Even in the grip of her sullen fury, Granny Weatherwax spared a nod.
"She's coming along," she said.
She looked up and down the corridor and leaned closer to Nanny Ogg's ear.
"I ain't going to give him the pleasure of saying it," she said. "But he's got us beaten."
"Well, I don't know," said Nanny. "Our Jason and a few sharp lads could soon—"
"You saw some of his guards. They aren't the old sort. These are a tough kind."
"We could give the boys just a bit of help."
"It wouldn't work. People have to sort this thing out for themselves."
"If you say so, Esme," said Nanny meekly.
"I do. Magic's there to be ruled, not for ruling."
Nanny nodded, and then, remembering a promise, reached down and picked up a fragment of stone from the rubble on the tunnel floor.
"I thought you'd forgotten," said the ghost of the king by her ear.
Further down the passage, the fool was capering after McGrath.
"Can I see you again?" he said.
"Well, I don't know,"
said McGrath, her heart singing a smug song.
"How about tonight?" said the fool.
"Oh, no," said McGrath. "I'm very busy tonight."
She had intended to curl up with a hot milk drink and Goody Wemper's notebooks on experimental astrology, but instinct told her that any suitor should have an uphill struggle put in front of him, just to make him keener.
"Tomorrow night, then?" the fool persisted. "I think I should be washing my hair. I could get Friday night free."
"We do a lot of work at night, you see."
"The afternoon, then?"
McGrath hesitated. Perhaps instinct had got it wrong.
"Well," she said, "about 2 o'clock in the meadow by the pond, all right?"
"Well,
see you there, then, all right?"
said the fool desperately.
"Fool!"
The Duchess's voice echoed along the passage, and a look of terror crossed his face.
"I've got to go," he said. "The meadow okay? I'll wear something so you recognize me, all right?"
"All right,"
echoed McGrath, hypnotized by the sheer pressure of his persistence. She turned and ran after the other witches. There was pandemonium outside the castle. The crowd that had been there at Granny's arrival had grown considerably, and had flowed in through the now unguarded gateway and lapped around the keep. Civil disobedience was new to Loncre, but its inhabitants had already mastered some of its more elementary manifestations, viz., the jerking of rakes and sickles in the air with the simple up-and-down motions, accompanied by grimaces and cries of "Grrrr!" Although a few citizens, who hadn't quite grasped the idea, were waving flags and cheering. Advanced students were already eyeing the more combustible buildings inside the walls. Several sellers of hot meat pies and sausages in a bun had appeared from nowhere. They always do, everywhere. No one sees them arrive. The logical explanation is that the franchise includes the stall, the paper hat, and a small gas-powered time machine.
And we're doing a brisk trade.
Pretty soon, someone was going to throw something. The three witches stood at the top of the steps that led to the keep's main door, and surveyed the sea of faces.
"There's our Jason," said Nanny happily, and Wayne, and Darren, and Kev, and Trev, and Nev.
I will remember their faces, said Lord Felmet, emerging between them and putting a hand on their shoulders. And do you see my archers on the walls?
I see them, said Granny grimly.
Then smile and wave, said the Duke, so that the people may know that all is well. After all, have you not been to see me today on matters of state?
He leaned closer to Granny.
Yes, there are 100 things you could do, he said, but the ending would always be the same.
He drew back.
I am not an unreasonable man, I hope, he added in cheerful tones. Perhaps, if you persuade the people to be calm, I may be prevailed upon to moderate my rule somewhat. I make no promises, of course.
Granny said nothing.
Smile and wave, commanded the Duke.
Granny raised one hand in a vague motion and produced a brief rictus that had nothing whatsoever to do with humour. Then she scowled and nudged Nanny Ogg, who was waving and mugging like a maniac.
No need to get carried away, she hissed.
But there's our Reet and our Charlene and their babbies, said Nanny. Cooey!
Will you shut up, you daft old bism, snapped Granny, and pull yourself together.
Jolly good, well done, said the Duke.
He raised his hands, or at least his hand. The other still ached. He'd tried the grater again last night, but it hadn't worked.
"People of Lanqua," he cried, "do not be afeard. I am your friend. I will protect you from the witches. They have agreed to leave you in peace."
Granny stared at him as he spoke. "He's one of these maniac depressives," she said, "up and down like a wasname. Kill you one minute and ask you how you're feeling the next." She became aware that he was looking at her expectantly.
"What? I said, I now call upon the respected Granny Weatherwax to say a few words."
he said.
"You said that, did you?"
"Yes."
"You've gone a long way too far," said Granny.
"I have, haven't I?"
The Duke giggled. Granny turned to the expectant crowd, which went silent.
"Go home," she said.
There was a further long silence.
"Is that all?"
said the Duke.
"Yes."
"What about pledges of eternal allegiance?"
"What about them? Gaither, will you stop waving at people?"
"Sorry."
"And now we are going to go, too," said Granny. "But we were all getting on so well," said the Duke.
"Come, Gaither," said Granny icily. "And where's McGrath got to?"
McGrath looked up guiltily. She had been deep in conversation with the fool, although it was the kind of conversation where both parties spent a lot of time looking at their feet and picking at their fingernails. 90% of true love is acute, ear-burning embarrassment.
"We're leaving," said Granny.
"Friday afternoon, remember?"
hissed the fool.
"Well, if I can," said McGrath.
Nanny Ogg leered. And so Granny Weatherwax swept down the steps and through the crowds, with the other two running behind her. Several of the grinning guards caught her eye and wished they hadn't. But here and there, among the watching crowd, was a barely suppressed snigger. She hurtled through the gateway, across the drawbridge, and through the town. Granny, walking fast, could beat most other people at a run. Behind them the Duke, who had crested the latest manic peak on the switchback of his madness, and was now coasting speedily towards the water splash of despair, laughed.